When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark. With me, as always, is a very reluctant Charles W. Chuckers Bryant.
Not always reluctant.
No.
Always here.
With me as always.
Sometimes reluctant.
Is a reluctant Chuck Bryant.
How's it going, Josh?
It's going fine for me.
I'm great, dude. I'm going to see Bob Dylan tonight.
Are you really?
Living legend.
With Leon Redbone or Russell?
Yeah.
Leon Russell, right?
Yeah, he's opening up, I think. I don't really care about that.
I always confuse him with Edgar Winter.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
not musically, just they kind of look alike.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's all I have to say about that.
Okay.
Chuck, you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, so back in November 1966.
Okay.
Are you ready for this? We should probably say, first let me tell you, Chuck, we're going to make it through this, okay?
I have PTSD from the Sun podcast.
We need to do PTSD. I always forget that. Let me just write that down.
All right.
PTSD. Yes, and now we're doing the Moon podcast, which really, aside from the orbital dynamics, has almost no physics to it whatsoever.
Yeah, it'll be better than the Sun.
Okay,
but
so
it's still a little mind numbing for me.
It'll be okay. We'll make it interesting.
All right.
So back in November 1966, there was a lunar orbiter called the Orbiter 2.
Okay.
Because it was the second one.
Mm-hmm.
And it was flying around the Moon, taking pictures of it for the impending Moon landing that the Apollo program was leading up toward, right?
Yeah, exciting.
And it had taken its last bit of film, last picture, and it actually took what's called the picture of the century, or it was at the time. It was this kind of side shot of the Moon rather than from above. It was almost like from the side so you could see the elevation and everything, and it just looked like a new view of the Moon. So anyway, the NASA controllers tell Orbiter 2, go ahead and crash land. And it did, on the dark side of the Moon, never to be heard from again until like a week ago, when another lunar orbiter, which was taking pictures for the moon base program,
mm-hmm.
It's not around anymore. It got canceled.
Yeah, we'll talk about that.
Caught this kind of crater, a butterfly-shaped crater, that's characteristic of a low-trajectory landing.
Was that it?
And it's exactly where NASA thought it would be.
Wow.
So there you go. One of the mysteries of the moon solved.
That's kind of cool.
This thing's been sitting there for, 40 years.
Was there a chimp or anything? Like,
no, nothing like
that. An old
chimp? But I mean, you just to think of this like lunar orbiter mm-hmm. crashed by itself, sitting on the dark side of the moon for 40 years. That's
lonely.
It's chilling, isn't it?
It is.
Have you seen the movie Moon?
Yes. Enjoyed that very much.
You know, the guy who directed that, Duncan Jones, that's David Bowie's son.
Yeah, Bowie's son.
Yeah. Imagine David Bowie being your dad.
I want to see him perform live more than anything else ever, and I don't think he'll ever do it.
Oh, he doesn't perform any longer?
No, he hadn't played, and I think his last tour was like 10 years ago or something. And he kind of said, this is it.
Huh.
Come see me. I'll be on my Hawaiian island with him on.
Is that he lives in an island? On an
well,
island?
He has a place in Kauai.
Nice.
I'm sure he'd spend some time there.
Very nice.
All right. Sorry.
So I guess.
Good movie, though.
Can you see we're like really trying to put this
off? Yeah.
Anyway, yes. The moon is a good movie, and the moon is a good planetary satellite to Earth. It does all sorts of cool, beneficial things for Earth. Did you know that?
I did.
It has an influence on Earth.
That's true.
So let's talk about the moon, Chuck.
Should we go all the way back, Josh, to the times of Aristotle?
Why not?
Aristotle, Josh, as we all know, believed in the geocentric model of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
Galileo said, no, 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 you're wrong. It's heliocentric.
And apparently he came to that conclusion by studying the moon.
Yeah.
He basically
was like, the sun is the center of the universe, mm-hmm. you jerk, not the earth.
Right.
And they said, you know what? That's heresy. And you're going to be under house arrest for the rest of your life.
Yeah. And he's like, well, yeah. I have a lot of wine and cheese in my house, so that's not so bad.
And I didn't leave much anyway. So.
Yeah. I don't like the outside world.
But at first, you know, when I guess he had a better telescope or something, because Galileo saw a lot more detail, it sounds like, than Aristotle did.
I don't think Aristotle had a telescope.
Was that the deal?
I think that was.
He was just looking at it?
I think Copernicus was the first one to look through a telescope.
Okay.
Or Galileo was before Copernicus, and Copernicus had a nicer telescope.
I think Galileo came after Copernicus.
All right. Well, then that's the way it went.
We're going to get this wrong.
We totally are. But continue, Chuck.
But the point is, Aristotle thought the Earth was the center of the universe and that the moon had dark spots and light spots they thought were seas.
Right. Maria.
Yes. I looked up a bunch of pronunciations on this one, by the way.
Maria?
Yeah, no, that sounds right.
Yeah. And the lighter spots were correctly perceived to be land. Or Terre.
Yeah, but it's all land, as it turns out.
It does turn out. The moon is kind of a boring place.
Yeah, you think?
I think as a destination, yes, I think it's incredibly boring.
Not a lot to do there.
No. It'd be cool to go there. I'm sure it's the most thrilling thing in the world to do, or beyond the world to do,
yeah.
to go to the moon and be on the moon.
Mm-hmm.
But just, you know, being back here on Earth and discussing parts of it, like the moon as a destination is kind of boring. What the moon does, where the moon came from, I think is fascinating.
I do too. And despite the fact that they were not seas, they still call the Maria seas.
Yes.
Sea of Tranquility.
Mar Tranquility or Mar Tranquillium.
Et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. And the Sea of Tranquility is where the first moon landing took place.
Yeah, they thought that looks like a nice place to land.
And that was 43 years ago this month when we're recording. When this comes out, it'll be last month. But that Buzz Aldrin, right, who never gets mentioned first.
Yeah, Neil Armstrong second. How about that?
Landed on the moon. Apparently Buzz Aldrin was the first person to urinate on the moon.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Neil Armstrong didn't. Buzz did while they were there.
Not on the moon, but while on the moon.
While on the moon.
Okay.
Yeah. And you always have to church it up, don't you?
Well, I mean, that's disrespectful. He'd be literally on the surface of the moon. Well,
I think something probably really bad would happen to his physiology if he tried to pee on the moon.
Well, it would float away anyway, right?
Yeah, but, I mean, he'd just implode.
Right, okay.
Yeah, vacuum. And since Buzz Aldrin first peed on the moon in 1969, for the following 3 years, 12 other Americans set foot on the moon.
Yeah, and you don't hear a lot about that.
Supposedly. And were, as far as we know, the only people to set foot on the moon so far. And they brought back about 842 pounds, which is 382 kilograms of moon rock, moon dust, and it was studied. And then that's about it.
That was all they had. They were like, well, I guess we can bring back some of these rocks and... That's all. Over.
What? Yeah, I told everybody on Earth I'd bring them something, but there is nothing here.
I wonder if they got a little piece of rock. I'm sure they did.
Surely.
You should be able to ask for that, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, yeah, if you're the guy who went and got it.
Yeah.
They kind of
keepers.
Yeah, exactly. And so since then, you know, since they brought back this moon rock, a lot of these questions that have been around since ancient times were settled. Just really in the last, like, 40 years or so.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, we now know, okay, for sure that there isn't water on the moon. Supposedly, there could be.
Mm.
but we now have a good idea, thanks to the moon rocks, how the moon was formed, which settled a longstanding debate.
That's right.
And, yeah.
And just being there, they found out a lot of stuff. Like, they were like, hey, this isn't a sea. It's all land.
Right.
About 15% of it is... the dark spots that you see, the Maria.
The Maria.
And 85% of it is the Terre. Is that Terre?
Terre.
And that's the lighter parts of the moon that you see. And that's like mountainous. It's crazy. Right. Steep mountains, craters, all kinds of things there on the Terre.
Well, yeah, because the Earth was about 4 billion years ago. There were a lot of meteorites bombarding this neck of the solar system.
Yeah.
Right? And the Earth took as many as the moon, if not more. It still happens today, every day, meteorites hit the Earth. But our atmosphere burns most of them up. And the ones that made it through the atmosphere and had made a substantial impact on the Earth have been largely covered over by the biogeochemical processes that take place on Earth.
Yeah.
The moon is utterly devoid of these things these days.
So they're just craters.
And has been for about the last 3 billion years. So just about anything that's happened over the last 3 billion years, right,
mm-hmm.
is just a few meteorites, some impacts here or there. But for the most part, the moon's surface was shaped in about 4 billion to 3 billion years ago, and it's remained the same ever since then.
Yeah. Right? In addition, they think there were volcanoes at one point on the moon because they noticed rills, like these channel-like depressions that they think was from lava. They found old lava flows and lava tubes.
Mm-hmm.
So they said, hey, looks like there were some volcanoes here at one point.
Yes, and that accounts for a lot of stuff on the moon, but also some of its composition as well.
No soil?
No, it has something called regolith. And regolith means basically like blanket over solid.
Oh, yeah.
Rock, right? So it's really just this kind of fine particulate dust.
Moon dust.
Mixed with volcanic glass and then larger rocks, and it's just covers the surface of the moon. It doesn't have soil because it doesn't have any living organisms that are required to make soil.
Yeah, nothing organic on the moon. Correct?
Yeah.
So they brought back these rocks. They found out that the Maria, which is what we said was only 15%, the dark spots, was primarily that one word that we said over and over on the show.
What?
Basalt?
Yeah. Basalt.
And that is igneous rock from cooled lava. So, again, with the volcanoes. And the highland regions, the mountain regions we talked about, was mainly anorthosite and breccia.
Yeah. Did you look that one up?
I did.
When there's a C-I or C-A in Italian, that makes a ch sound. But it's C-H makes a k sound.
So it's backwards from what we might think as Americans.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty neat.
But correct if you're in Italian.
That's right.
All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on. Hey, everybody. Did you know that Boricua is the name for someone from Puerto Rico? But it's more than just a name. It's a way of life and representation of the vibrant spirit of the island.
Yeah, that's right. It's an island that's filled with adventure around every corner and natural treasures waiting to be explored, like El Yunque, the only tropical rainforest in the entire United States.
That's right. Or you can get swept away by natural beauty and come away with unique stories that could only be experienced in Puerto Rico that remind you of why you travel in the first place.
Visits end, but stories last forever. You don't become a part of the island. It becomes a part of you.
That's right. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
What else, Chuck?
The lunar rocks have very little water in volatile compounds, so they resemble the Earth's mantle.
They have very little volatile compounds or water, and then Tracy puts in as if they've been baked. A little bit of, like, foreshadowing.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
And also, Chuck, they found that the highland areas are much older. The rocks in the highland areas are much older than the Maria areas, right?
Yeah.
And so now with all of this information, we have a pretty good idea of how the moon formed.
Yeah. Oh, they also had they had some seismometers, and they found that there's no shifting of the plates going on. Right. No tectonic activity on the moon.
There are no moonquakes. And they also used magnetometers, and they did not detect any substantial magnetic field around the moon, which means that it doesn't have a substantial iron core.
Right. So they're basically just trying to figure out how much is it like the Earth in some ways. I mean, they wanted to find out what it was, but they were kind of comparing because some of the old previously thought reasons why the moon was there had to do with it literally spinning off of the Earth.
Well, it's significant that moon rocks are similar in composition to mantle rocks found on Earth.
Yeah.
Pretty close, which means to a lot of people that the moon has always been connected to the Earth in a lot of people's minds, right? So there's different ways that it formed, but it's always in relation to the Earth, almost, except for one.
Yeah, so previously to the lunar landing, they had a few ideas. They thought maybe there was the double planet hypothesis, which was the Earth and moon formed together.
Yeah, because remember in the asteroid mining podcast, we talked about the formation of planets. It's just it starts in this, it starts spinning, and then everything just kind of comes together.
That's a good, easy way to say it.
Yeah.
The capture hypothesis was the Earth's gravity captured the moon as it was just cruising by.
Right. That's the only one where they weren't related.
But the Earth said, hey, we're going to hold you captive now because we like your gentle light that you cast upon us at nighttime.
Yeah.
And then the fission hypothesis, which was the Earth spun so much and so rapidly that a blob of molten Earth spun off, and that was the moon.
Right.
That sounds a little – even in the 60s, I would have been like, really?
Well, I mean, think about it. If it's forming and everything's just kind of loose still.
Yeah, I guess we didn't know as much back then.
So all of these have been kind of shot down, right?
That's right.
The fact that the moon and the Earth's compositions are not the same means that they probably didn't form right alongside one another because they should be pretty much the same material.
Yeah.
The Earth can't possibly capture something as large as the moon. And keep it there.
No.
And then lastly, Chuck, the Earth has never been known to be able to spin fast enough to spin any part of it off.
Right.
If it were, we would be the first things off of the Earth if it could spin that fast.
Right? Not anybody.
Let alone a sizable chunk.
Right.
So what they think now is after the 70s, they came up with this thing called the giant impactor theory.
Yeah, and that's standing up fairly well, right?
Still? Yeah. It's this idea that another planet or planetoid or something about the size of Mars early in the Earth's formation came along and collided with the Earth with such force that it was absorbed into the Earth.
Well, it broke off a chunk, and then that part filled in the part that was chunked off.
Right. It's like what are those twins where one eats the other in the womb called?
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of like that.
Mean twins.
So it's like the Earth has like another planet that really just looks like a teratoma with fingernails or teeth inside of it.
Yes. And that one is actually held up. They've done computer simulations, and they said, this could have happened.
Well, we left out the most important part. From that impact, it shot out a bunch of stuff that formed into the moon.
Yes, and that was very hot, obviously, and it cooled eventually, but that's why the rocks appear to have been baked.
Right.
That was the foreshadowing.
Right. So the idea behind this, like you said, it's stood up that enjoys the majority opinion, right?
Agreed.
So after this impact, as the moon's spinning and forming itself into a spheroid, it's covered in this ocean of magma, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this ocean of magma starts to cool. And inside, the core is solid. Outside, magma. it starts to cool and everything kind of switches. The outside becomes solid. The inside's magma.
Right.
And then after a while, there's this period of bombardment that I talked about of meteorites in the neighborhood. It forms all of the highlands, the craters. Almost every feature on the surface of the moon is formed during this bombardment period.
When the lava is eking out through the cracks from the center?
That came after that.
Okay.
So at this point, the moon has a molten core.
Okay.
A solid exterior.
Yes.
And is being bombarded with meteorites. So we're seeing the stuff that we see today happen, 3.9 billion years ago. Then after that period, there's a period of volcanic activity all over the moon.
Okay, so that's when it's leaking up through the cracks.
And it leaks up through the cracks in the Maria areas, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which explains why there's more craters in the highlands than in the Maria, because the craters were covered over by this basalt, which is so prevalent in these areas, right?
That makes a lot of sense, actually.
And then lastly, this volcanic activity expelled all of the heat in the moon, turning it into a dead, lifeless Hulk that we know and love today.
Well, that sounds sad, but I love it in its current state, so I'm actually happy about it.
Okay, so let's talk about it in its current state, Chuck. There's the moon. It's right there. That's how it got there.
Right.
That's kind of cool. Like, you didn't know that before.
I didn't until we researched this stuff.
All right. So in its current state, Chuck, it's in this orbit around Earth. It doesn't spin on its axis, and it's basically dragged along like, a wheel that's stuck. You can still drag it across the ground.
Yeah.
It's just not spinning.
Sure.
This is much the same way, but rather than in a vertical orientation, this is horizontal. The moon is not spinning on a horizontal axis. It's being dragged around.
That's right.
And so that's why we only see the one side of the moon, the same side of the moon, all the time.
The happy side. The side with the cheese.
Well, we wouldn't know if the other side was happier.
Well, that's the dark side. That's the scary side.
Yeah.
Ask that crashed lunar rover. Or not rover, but orbiter.
Yeah, Orbiter 2.
Orbiter 2. So you're talking about the 29, is it 29.5 days or is it just 29?
It's my understanding that it's 29.5.
Okay, that's what I thought. Sometimes it is between the Earth and the Sun. Sometimes it's behind us.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're talking about here is the moon phases. That's why you'll see the crescent moon or the half moon or the full moon. Different parts of the moon are lit up by the sun depending on where it is in relation to the Earth. It's pretty simple.
Yeah.
And neato.
Yeah. When it's lit up and when it's not lit up, there's a huge, huge difference in temperature. What was that? Was it a Futurama? It was a Futurama where they had to get back to their transport before the horizon line, the point where the sun was, hitting the moon.
I didn't see that.
Got to them, or else it was just going to vaporize them.
Wow.
Because the difference in temperature, the mean temperature in the shadow of the moon, if I may, I know you like stats.
Please.
The mean temperature in the shadow of the moon is negative 292 degrees Fahrenheit.
That is one mean temperature.
Negative 180 degrees Celsius.
Yeah.
In the sunlight, Chuck, the mean, this is the one, that's the average, right? Or is the median average?
Why do you even say that?
The mean surface temperature in the sunlight is 266 degrees Fahrenheit. That's 130 degrees Celsius.
Wow. That's quite a difference.
Yeah, there's like a 600 degree difference.
That's the power of the sun, my friend.
Right.
Which we've gone over in detail. So over these billions of years, a couple of changes have happened to the moon. It's moved a little further away from the Earth, and its rotation has slowed some.
Okay.
Over the years.
Yes.
Which, that doesn't mean anything to me right now, but it's worth pointing out.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Did you talk about the different phases, like the waning and the waxing and all that?
Well, I didn't go over it in that much detail, no.
Well, I've always just enjoyed this, right?
Okay.
So do you know what they call a moon that's growing toward full moon and is almost full?
That's waxing gibbous?
Yes. So remember that one. It's going on its way toward a full moon,
mm-hmm.
and there's more moon present than there isn't. There's
yes.
a waxing gibbous. And then do you know what it's called when it's going toward a new moon, and it's a thin little sliver?
The waning crescent?
Yes. If you remember waning crescent and waxing gibbous, you can name any phase of the moon just by looking at it and impress your friends.
That's true, because you also have the waxing crescent first quarter, a waning gibbous last quarter, and everyone's favorite, the full moon.
Yeah, the full moon's, that's the money moon.
Sure, and you know, people say that things go wacky at full moons, but I think that we found that that is largely just stories, and it's not necessarily been proven. Like emergency medical, emergency rooms are supposed to be like wacky, and people go crazy in the full moon, and werewolves come
Isn't
out.
Isn't that backed up, though, by numbers?
Tracy said it's not.
Where did you see that?
It was somewhere in here.
I didn't see it.
Well, it's in there.
Weird.
Or maybe I saw it somewhere else.
Yeah.
But they said it's pretty much anecdotal. But I thought I had seen that, too, where it was backed up by numbers.
Well, there is. There's another. There's a, I guess, if you're a skeptic, it's a crackpot theory. But there's a bunch of people who believe in the concept of the supermoon. You heard about that?
That sounds familiar.
So the moon travels, its orbit around the Earth is not a perfect circle. It's an ellipse. So that means that there are points where it's as far as it can be away from the Earth and as close as it can be. So as close as it can be is called perigee,
mm-hmm.
and as far away is called apogee. And it hits these once a month each, right?
Right.
So it's not unusual for the moon to be in perigee or apogee. And normally, when it is, it just means that the tides are higher and lower. And we'll talk about tides in a minute.
That's right.
But if it's in a full moon and it's at perigee,
mm-hmm.
which means that there's more exposed, right?
Yeah.
To the sunlight, which really doesn't mean anything.
Right.
But it's closer, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Supposedly, this happens like once every 19 years, supposedly that's linked to all sorts of destructive stuff on Earth, like earthquakes and floods and things like that.
Huh.
And you can go back and say, oh, well, the moon, there was a super moon in 1954.
When was the last one, you know?
The last one was March 19th, 2011. March 11th, 2011 was the Japan quake.
Yeah.
So people who believe in the supermoon say, there, see? Like,
right.
We can go back and find this all the time. And then people who poo-poo it say,
if you
you're
look
just
for
linking, yeah, you're linking
two
unrelated phenomena.
Hmm.
Yeah.
That is very interesting.
But that's the supermoon. At the very least, it sounds very cool.
Yeah, super anything sounds cool.
Right.
All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on. Hey, everybody. Did you know that Boricua is the name for someone from Puerto Rico? But it's more than just a name. It's a way of life and representation of the vibrant spirit of the island.
Yeah, that's right. It's an island that's filled with adventure around every corner and natural treasures waiting to be explored, like El Yunque, the only tropical rainforest in the entire United States.
That's right. Or you can get swept away by natural beauty and come away with unique stories that could only be experienced in Puerto Rico that remind you of why you travel in the first place.
Visits end, but stories last forever. You don't become a part of the island, it becomes a part of you.
That's right. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
So, Chuck, I said that we were going to talk about tides, and I deliver on my promises.
Well, you can't talk about the moon without talking about tides.
It's true.
And Bill O'Reilly. We mentioned him.
Oh, yeah,
before,
that's
right.
Right, yeah.
The moon has a gravitational force. We all know that. And it pulls on water in the oceans. It stretches this water out and forms what's called a tidal bulge on the sides of the planet that are in line with the moon.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first part. The moon water obviously pulls on the side closest to it, which causes the bulge toward the moon, pulls on the Earth a little bit, and drags the Earth away from the water from the opposite side, and there's another tidal bulge, and the area under the bulge The areas of the Earth under the bulge are high tide. The areas on the thin sides are low tide.
So just want to
make
sure.
It's like clockwork.
That's mind-boggling to me.
6 hours. Well, so 12 hours.
The moon pulls tugs on the ocean.
It does.
Tugs on the ocean toward it, right? And it even moves the Earth a little bit.
It does.
Into the ocean a little more. So
said another way, the moon actually pulls water.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive.
It is.
Yeah. And then on the other side, it pulls it away from the water. It pulls the Earth away from where the water is. So that's low tide. And yeah, like you said, that happens every 6 hours, right?
Yeah. And the other cool thing is it also, the moon stabilizes the Earth's rotation. If it wasn't for the moon, we might end up looking like a wobbly top it's starting to slow down.
Yes.
Like Inception.
Yeah.
Your favorite movie.
So, you know, that top wobbling Tracy talks about precession, where because of that skew to its axis, the angle of its axis, the polar star changes every like 14,000 years, I think, 26,000 years. So right now, Polaris is the North Star. The North Star in 3000 BC was called Thuban. Did you know that?
No. So we're going to get another one and
AD 14,000 Vega will be the pole star.
Huh. Yeah.
Isn't that cool?
That is pretty cool. I hope I'm around to see it.
I don't know. There's going to have to be some significant advances in longevity research.
Yeah, in the next like 20 years.
So what else do we have, Chuck?
Well, we've got eclipses if you want to dive into that. It's worthy.
Take it.
Don't you think? when the moon passes between the sun and the Earth, occasionally you're going to get that exact alignment of the sun, moon, and Earth, and that's a solar eclipse.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if a lot of people know this. When you have a solar eclipse, that same month you're going to have a lunar eclipse as well.
Yeah, it's like in the bag.
In the bag.
But the moon has to be full, correct?
Yeah, when the moon is full,
right,
a lunar eclipse will occur in the same month as the solar eclipse. Yes, you're right.
Okay, but for the solar eclipse, it's got to be a new moon?
Yes, Josh. New phase only.
So when you have a lunar eclipse, the moon is new, and it's in line between the sun and the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it's full, 15 days later, 14 days later, it's on the other side of the Earth, you're going to have a lunar
still
eclipse.
Lined up.
It makes
sense. Or lined up again, yeah.
And depending on where it goes into the Earth's shadow, either the penumbra, which is like an angled part of the shadow, it's not the full shadow, or the umbra, which is the full-on shadow, it'll either be a partial or a full eclipse.
That's right. And kids, remember, never stare into a solar eclipse.
Right.
You can stare at a lunar eclipse all night long if you want to.
So we talked about, will the moon save humanity?
Uh-huh.
We talked about lunar bases. And we talked about mining asteroids.
And fake moon landing. This is like our fourth Moonie podcast.
But I think that those should be required listening because, you know, there's an idea that there's possibly ice that was missed on the moon. There's been a couple of the Clementine probe in 1994 found evidence of it.
Yeah.
And then a more recent one said, yeah, that's probably ice right there.
Which would be a big deal.
Well, yeah, it probably got there from like comets or something else. But there's ice on the moon. And if there is, then that means that we have water and fuel on the moon for a moon base, which is very exciting news.
It's a lot cheaper, apparently, if you had a moon base to send off a rocket from the moon than it would be from the Earth.
Plus, you can be like, I got a moon base. And that's just cool.
Yeah.
You know?
Way cool.
It sounds so 60s.
Unless you see the movie Moon. And that wasn't very cool at all.
No,
that was very lonely.
Good movie. All right, good moon movies. What you got?
Well, Moon.
Okay, me too.
What else is there?
Moonraker.
Yeah. Paper Moon.
That's
your favorite movie.
Yeah.
Moon River.
That's a song.
Yeah, sure. I bet there's been a movie called Moon River.
You think
if not, I'm going to make
Breakfast
it.
Breakfast at Tiffany's. You think you remember the film?
Breakfast at Tiffany's?
Yeah.
I love that movie.
Well, that's one thing we've got.
Okay. Wow. What song is that?
Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Is that the name of it?
Yeah.
By that awful band, who I hope doesn't listen to this show. sorry, that was a sidetrack. So the reason we mentioned that they found what they think might be ice is because that's pretty important because President Bush was gung-ho to go find out and potentially get on the moon again.
Mm-hmm.
Obama came in 2010 in February and canceled the Constellation program.
Right.
Which I looked into because my first thought was, you know, I'm a big fan of our president. And I thought, well, that stinks. I wanted to go back to the moon.
Right.
And I think there's it's worthy to do so.
Well, we will. It'll just be private companies that get there.
Exactly. That's what he says, at least, as he ordered a review and found it to be behind schedule and over budget and just not a very lean program.
Mm-hmm.
And so, hey, let's extend the International Space Station for about 5 years, give NASA about $6 billion, and then see if we can get some private companies to start shuttling astronauts up there into the private sector.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens. Neil Armstrong is against that, but Buzz Aldrin is for it.
Really?
Yeah. So I don't know if they're duking it out or what, but.
How do you feel about it?
I don't know. I mean, I think if the private sector could get involved, then that's good. That's companies making money.
It is, but I tend to think of like the moon as a part of the commonwealth of humanity. You know, like that.
Yeah.
It just seems like you shouldn't apply capitalism to the moon.
Yeah, maybe not. But what, you know, China might get there and set up camp and be like, No.
China will get there. They are spending a significant amount of money. They're building their own international space station. Actually, it's just a national space station because it's just theirs.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they'll be on the moon.
The national space station.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, I mean, do we have an article on who owns space? I know we have who owns the oceans. We did that. But, I mean, that's a valid thing.
Well, let's find out.
What if China got up there and they're like, this is ours now?
Yeah.
You can see it.
Moon base.
All right. We got through that.
All right. Well, that's the moon. If you want to learn more about the moon, and seriously, there's some really handy graphs and illustrations in this. Type in moon in the search bar at howstuffworks.com. And that brings up listener mail.
Hold on there, partner. We are going to plug our new audiobook that is available on iTunes. Super Stuff. It's called The Super Stuff Guide to Happiness.
Yeah.
Features interviews and Josh's niece, a very cute niece, and what else?
Great sound design.
Yeah.
We talked to Eric Wilson, who wrote the book Against Happiness.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome Wake Forest professor.
Yeah, great interviews in this one.
Yeah. And we talked to a bunch of great people. And just really got into what is happiness, what makes us happy, how can we possibly study happiness, and just came up with some pretty good answers.
So iTunes.
It's worth it. It's worth the $3.99.
It is.
Or more in Australia.
Or if it makes you feel better, divide that $3.99 over the 340-something shows.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point.
And you ain't paying nothing.
That's almost just like a penny a show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not even.
Except in Australia, where it's going to be more like a tuppence a show.
Yeah, we're going to work that off over the next couple of years.
Yeah.
To our Aussie friends.
So it's on iTunes, the Stuff You Should Know Super Stuff Guide to Happiness. And when you search that on iTunes, it'll probably bring up the Super Stuff Guide to the Economy, which is pretty good listen, too, if you ask me.
Agreed.
And now that we've done this, and we did it shamelessly.
That's right.
It's time for listener mail again.
Josh, we called for a karma off. Send us your karma stories. I'm going to read one. And this is from a dude in a band that I'm actually a fan of.
Okay.
And their name is Fang Island. And they're awesome. And they're based in Brooklyn, New York now, although they're originally from Rhode Island. And Jason Bartel of Fang Island wrote in and said this. I've been enjoying the podcast for a while. I'm in a touring band. Spend way too much time in the van. So I welcome the opportunity to keep my brain occupied. So thanks. And if people wrote in with lots of karma stories, and if you think I'm just reading this because I'm a fan of this guy's band, then you're right. So I apologize if you think your story was better. He went to college in Providence, Rhode Island, was driving home to New Hampshire one holiday weekend. And nearing the end of the trip, there's a toll there, and I had zero money in my wallet, and I was stuck in line, and it was too late. In hindsight, I was probably overly panicked because the penalty for not having enough money at a toll in New Hampshire is probably pretty minuscule. Like, they probably would have just said, don't worry about it. They're really nice up there, you know? Yeah? You ever been there?
Yeah. Okay. No, I have not been in New Hampshire, but I assume they're very nice.
Yeah, Vermont. They're all just, like, super nice folks.
Right.
Nevertheless, I started sweating. My heart was racing. I began scrounging for loose change to no avail. One long shot scenario that crossed my mind was maybe the car in front of me would pay for me for some reason, but I dismissed it, so I barely knew that I had even thought it. But when it came time for me to face the music, it turns out this is exactly what happened. The operator said the car in front of me covered my fare and said to have a nice day. I was stunned. I have no idea still why they paid for me. I even sped up alongside them to give them a thank you.
And waved my gun at them and told them to pull over because I wanted to ask them.
But they never acknowledged me. Normally it would be a stone cold case of luck, except that I've actually done this before for other people in the past when I felt randomly charitable. I realize this is probably the very definition of the simplified new age interpretation of karma that you were talking about. But I was just struck by the almost cute one-to-one ratio of this particular karmic transaction. And that is Jason Bartel of Fang Island, who is a great band. They got a 8.3 review on their debut album on Pitchfork, which is really high. Pitchfork, they're not kind to bands usually.
Nice.
Well, that's not true. They review how they review.
Right.
But an 8.3 is good.
They're not sycophants.
They are not. They will trash your record if they don't like it. So they're awesome, and go see them. They're on tour, I think. Said they might be coming through Atlanta this fall. So maybe.
Do you want to say their name again?
Fang Island.
Okay.
They opened up for Flaming Lips a lot on this last tour, so that should tell you something about their sound.
Very cool. Do they sound like the Flaming Lips then?
No, I mean, a lot of it's instrumental. I mean, they're just insanely talented, and their self-described sound is, quote, everyone high-fiving everyone.
Nice.
And he's kind of right.
That sounds like how I would describe the Go Team.
Yeah, they have been compared to them, although this is like a three-guitar onslaught.
Nice.
But it's like happy music. It's not like explosions in the sky.
Gotcha.
Type of instrumental stuff.
I gotcha.
And they got words, too. It's just not like first chorus type of songs.
Are they like Lions and Scissors?
Very unique. Goodness me, that was a plug and a half.
Well, if you have a band that you think Chuck likes, he wants to hear about it.
I really do, actually. I don't like, what if one of my heroes listens to the show, and I'll never know?
Or what if it's a new band that you've never heard of yet?
Well, that too.
Okay. You should contact Chuck.
Like David Bowie, what if he listens?
David Bowie does not listen.
Right.
You can contact Chuck and me. We're both on the same email address. You just need to direct it toward us at stuffpodcast@howstuffworks.com.
Be sure to check out our new video podcast, Stuff from the Future. Join How Stuff Works staff as we explore the most promising and perplexing possibilities of tomorrow. Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Hey, if you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Use promo code STUFF20 to receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Switch now at Visible.com. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.
In business, first impressions are everything. And that's why every business owner needs to know about Ruby. Ruby is the virtual receptionist company who screens, transfers, and takes messages 24/7, all while making your customers feel special. You definitely don't want to hire a subpar front desk person. And with Ruby, they engage with your callers in a conversational way, just like your best employee would. Never miss another customer call again. This year, make your business the best it can be. Visit Ruby.com today. Or just call them at 844-900-RUBY.